that I would not. I feel good. I knew that I would not. So good, so good. I got to you. Oh, I feel nice.
All right, when he feels nice like sugar and spice, we come back, and we are back. We are here with Dr. Larry Kalkstein. He's an, I can't pronounce it, I'm not even going to try. He specializes in the impact of weather on human beings. He's been conducting research for over 35 years, so I guess he has a perspective. And he's the lead researcher on a number of projects dealing with the development and implementation of heat and health warning systems for major cities worldwide. He does great work at the University of Miami's prestigious Department of Public Health. Dr. Larry, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate your having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. And I know we're not heading to be Beijing here because we got great trade winds that keep us kind of clean. But what's going to happen as the planet heats up, Dr. Larry?
Well, you know, it's uncertain. It depends on how it heats up, Jim. One way is that every day gets a little bit warmer, but the other way is that the variability of the weather is going to be greater, which means that maybe the weather will stay the same most of the time, but the very hot days will just get hotter. And if that happens, there could be some major consequences that are very different than if it just heats up a little bit every day.
Tell me more.
Well, for example, let's take some of these vector-borne diseases that we're talking about, some of these mosquito-borne diseases like dengue fever and so on. If each day warms up a little bit, that'll mean that the breeding season of these mosquitoes will be longer, and generally they will populate more. But if, in fact, just the highest temperatures go up on very hot days and the other days stay the same, that may actually kill some of these mosquitoes because they really don't like extreme heat. So that's one of the problems here. It's hard to predict exactly how these diseases are going to spread if the climate warms.
Now, what are some of the other impacts? I live on the Bay. I can virtually see it at this point. I've lived there for 20 years, and 20 years ago, the footings on the Bay bridges didn't really go underwater that much, even at the king tide with high winds. Now, shoot, three, four times a month, they're freaking underwater.
Well, we have to be careful here, too, because, of course, there have been some small rises in sea level. A lot of times what you think is a rise in sea level is erosion. And so we don't have to worry. You're not going to be underwater anytime soon, I don't believe. But on the other hand, you know, if things go according to the way the models say, you know, in 50 to 100 years, sea level could rise to a degree that Miami Beach would be threatened with floods much more frequently than it is now. And we would have to do something offshore to make sure that that didn't happen. But there are all kinds of things that are happening or could happen if the climate changes the way they say. For example, agricultural belts could shift. You know, imagine the Corn Belt being in Canada instead of the United States. These are the kinds of things that might be unexpected. Imagine during heat waves having hundreds or maybe thousands of people dying, while today we don't have that many. All of these are possibilities. But again, this is the problem when you have something like this. Do you develop policy when you're so uncertain as to whether or not the problem is going to be real or how real it's going to be? It's hard to do.
Well, you know, I know that you advise the White House. What do you tell them?
Well, I don't want you to think I've advised Obama or done that personally. I have. When back in the day, when Al Gore was much more popular, we did write some speeches for him. But basically, what we tell them is that we think that we need to prepare for the uncertainty that's going to come. That is, some people say we should do nothing until we're more certain about climate change. Bide our time, and you know, let's really wait. Maybe there's really nothing going on. Other people say that we should do some draconian things right now because, after all, if we don't raise gas by $1 a gallon and put fuel taxes on to lessen consumption, we're going to burn up.
Oh, wait, you used the word.
When it comes to this, I think we can give lots of incentives to industry and business to keep them cleaner, give incentives to people to switch to, let's say, solar heating and so on. That's the way I figure it should go.
Well, it sounds really interesting, you know. Put your futurist hat on for just a second. It got a little warmer. The mosquito ponding is coming now because we got all this ponding with all the extra rain and such. We've got these heavy hurricanes now. What is something that the average person can just do to protect themselves, I guess, from a daily on a daily basis from some of these impacts?
Well, some of these viruses are moving worldwide. We're not so sure it's due to global warming. Part of it is due to the fact that we can travel so easily from place to place. So someone who has one of these vector-borne diseases can come to Miami, for example, and if a mosquito bites them and then bites you or me, it's possible that the disease can be transmitted. I would say, first of all, not to panic. After all, we are told we should try to prevent mosquito bites. We're supposed to put something on us, long sleeves if we can, or some protectant on us to keep mosquitoes from biting us. I would not change much at this time. I trust the public health system of the United States to think that we're suddenly not going to be overrun with Zika fever or chikungunya, the new disease that we're talking about, or dengue fever. I just don't think that's going to happen, particularly if we continue to keep our eye on it. And, of course, the CDC and health organizations and public health organizations around the world are. But one last thing about this. You know, Miami is kind of a gateway for a lot of these things. I mean, we have lots of travelers from the islands, tropical countries, and so on. And so they always keep a closer eye on Miami than any other places. That's not to say someone couldn't fly to Chicago with a disease of this kind, but everyone has their antenna up. So I would not alarm listeners into thinking that these mosquitoes are suddenly going to cause spread of these many diseases very rapidly.
Now, one last thing. We've only got a couple of minutes left, and I read your intro more carefully, and I think I can say bioclimatologist. It just looked really big and really big and scary with all the eyes and stuff in there when I was trying to read it real fast. Now, what do you tell the doctors of tomorrow about this? You train them. You talk to them. We've only got a couple minutes left. So what would you tell a young resident today who is going to be alive 50 years from now and have to deal with this stuff?
Yeah, well, first of all, I just want to say that I'm glad that as a I am not a medical doctor. I am a bioclimatologist, and I am the only such person in any medical school in the country. So the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine deserves credit to recognize that we need bioclimatology in our discipline. And I would say that what I would do if I were advising people who are doing medical research, that they should look into our field as well, because doctors, medical doctors, don't know much about weather and climate, and the fact that climate variability is more important than just the warming of the temperature, the thing that I told you at the beginning of the segment. We need to know whether we're going to have a much more variable climate or if it's just going to be smooth. Most medical doctors wouldn't know this. I think the advice I would give them in terms of understanding the climate impact on health and diseases, whether it be heat, the impact of pollution, and the impact on diseases, is to read more of the literature in our field, and that more medical schools should hire people in the climate field so they can collaborate with the medical people. Because quite honestly, I'm not a medical person, and I need their help just like they need mine.
Well, again, you drive us right to what we say about UHealth, that it's collaborative care. And I must say, is high five to Dean Goldschmidt for bringing you to the campus giving you the impact here that you have, because we need that here in Miami, of all places. Of course we need this.
Well, I'm happy to be here. You know, usually we reside in meteorology programs or geography departments. It's opened up a whole new world to me, and I think we're really moving ahead on many of these fronts because a lot of my colleagues are very appreciative of this kind of work.
Dr. Kalkstein, I hope I'm getting that right, but Larry?
Close enough, Jim.
Thanks, right? As I could be hit by a meteor, I am close enough. Larry, thank you so much for bringing your unique perspective, and I want updates from you on a regular basis. I hope you'll come back.
It would be my pleasure. It's good talking to you. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Thanks for letting our audience hear what you had to say. It's great stuff.
Thank
AC,
you, sir.
It's my pleasure, Doc.